All right. Are you ready to go there, Reg?
Good for you. You look in. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little nasal. I'm still nasal. I don't know. This is either lingering flu or lingering COVID or this is the new me. I don't know. But anyway, we will continue. All right, put it in the books. Episode number 335. I'll give you the three S's and the countdown. You give me the music. I'll give you a podcast. You ready to go? Very good. Levels look fine, so let's just do this thing. Here we go. Three, two, oh no, I'm sorry. Star, smile strong, and, what did you don't have the, okay, wait, well then get the, yeah, we'll get the music then. Hello? All right, there you go. Ready? Here we go. Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Whoa! All right, what was that now? First it was too slow, now it's okay. Ready? Three, two, one. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Where else would we be? But also, don't forget, listening is not your only responsibility, so get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty, that devotion, it warms the cockles of my heart. Also, if you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNRadio.com, go to the prompt for this for podcast, and go to the prompt for this podcast, and you will find huge, huge, huge stacks of podcasts. It's going to look like the ending of Raiders of the Lost Ark is filled with podcasts for you to explore, enjoy, binge on, you name it. Just keep scrolling down. Scroll down. You'll find more and more and more. It's always good to know where we've been so you know where we're going. We've done about 334 of these, so right now, where we're going is episode number 335. And I'm very happy for episode 335 to welcome back a regular contributor to the program, the podcast. We haven't had her on in a while, but it's always great to hear her voice and share her insights. And today's topic is one she was made for. When I think of this topic, I think of Emily Arminetti, welcome back to the Pop Culture Club. How you been?
Yeah, good, thanks. How about you?
Very well. I'm a little nasal. I was Emily and I were talking before we actually turned on the microphones here, and so you've had COVID. You are no longer impervious.
No, I thought I was a super dodger, but apparently
no. I don't think anybody is. I don't think anybody is. You can be as, and I know you, and you are very, what's the word? Disciplined or risk averse, whatever it is. Yes. And so, I knew when I asked you, I knew you're going to get, because even, if, so if you can get it, anyone can get it.
Listen, it got in my house, it crawled under my door, it crawled through the tiny little crack in the corner of my mask. It got me.
Now, I still deny that I had it.
Right. I know.
Even though there's no question. In fact, and so now I've had this lingering, I don't know. I'm afraid to take the test.
I believe that's called long COVID.
I know. I mean, I've been nasal. I mean, the last couple of podcasts I've been kind of struggling through, not as bad. I did record a podcast back in February unknowingly when I had COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like, I mean, I couldn't even, you know, I was still like, well, I don't know what happened to my voice, you know.
Yeah. Oh, but, God. But yeah. What could this possibly be?
No. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. Is there anything going around?
Yeah.
Jeez. But this is like,
what will it take to convince you that you have had COVID?
A ventilator.
Right, apparently so.
Jeez. Yeah, but this is, I've just had this.
Can I tell you something?
My sinuses are just, I will blow my nose and it's like, I'm blasting right through the Kleenex. I'm using Double Ply Bounty now.
Right. Well, I have to tell you, because I always listen every week.
Oh, do you?
Thank you. Oh, of course I do. Oh, yeah, of course great. I do. I mean, unless I'm on, and then I don't, because I've already heard it. but you know, you have been sounding kind of nasal, I have to tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I know. Mm-hmm. So maybe I've never recovered from it.
I mean.
Well, I just did. Well, it's really funny, though. It's always when I get after I do a play, I don't know if maybe I just get run down. You know.
So you're making all these excuses. Like,
well, no, because it's always, you know, it's because I always get I'm always sick, and I never, well, I say I never get sick, and then it's ridiculous to say that now. In my past, I never I never used to get sick. But it seems that, you know, when you do these plays, you know, you're just so, get immersed in this, and the hours are long, and it's every day, especially right leading up to the opening, and then you do the weekends, and then, you know, and you're talking, and you're, you know, you're just very active. And so when I'm done, I always seem to get like some kind of a cold or a hoarse voice. So that's why, and it's always,
or a novel virus.
Okay. And
I mean, what could it, you know, let's see, every time I do a play and I'm in a theater with, you
yeah,
know,
but this is before, but this, people, but this was before, like, COVID, though. This was before, okay, COVID, you know, this, oh, okay, was, okay, this was before,
listen,
COVID.
You know what, you're an artist, yeah, it takes,
right,
a lot out of you, okay?
Well, you know,
flexing your instrument.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's so funny when and everybody does this, so it's not like you know, unique to the shows that I've done, but I always question this kind of format. I understand why you do it, but then it also, so there's a thing like the week before you open is called like Hell Week or Tech Week, because of the fact that that's, you know, you've been rehearsing, and most of the time you haven't been rehearsing with the whole show together in terms of the lights and the sound and whatever, and even costumes. That's always until the last week. Mm-hmm. And so this last week, like say you open on a Friday, you know, from that Friday, you will go 7 days in a row of like 6 to 7 hours of rehearsals. And not, you're not you're not like physically doing something for 6 or 7 hours, but you're physically there.
Yeah.
Because, okay, we need this for that and put this on, you know, and go, okay, we're going to do this scene again and do the light, you know, and you're stopping and starting. And so it's these long days, and so I'm like, you know, what's ironic is that you've been leading up to this opening night when you want to be right at your best, right? It's opening night,
right?
And then you've been going for 7 days in a row, and certainly the adrenaline, you know, on opening night with an audience, you know, gives you an extra boost. Yeah. But it's like, instead of resting, so that your instrument, as you correctly put it, and everything else would be, you'll be at optimum level. You've been going for a week straight.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the rehearsals are, depending on the show, 4 times a week, maybe sometimes 5, which is also kind of grueling, but it's not like 7 or 8 hours at a time. Right. And so, so I think that one, you know, it's like once you get through that first kind of weekend, it's like you've been going for like 11 or 12 straight days. So I would think that your body is at a, you know, at a point where your, you know, defenses may be down, and your, you know, your immune system may be somewhat weakened or compromised. And then it is easy for you to catch some kind of a bug, whether it's, you know, a famous one.
Yeah.
Or just a run-of-the-mill kind of one.
Yeah, you're just the average run-of-the-mill. Yeah. You know what you need to do? I think Donna used to do this. She probably still does. You need to get some B12 shots. That's what you need when you're in the, yeah. In
I never
the,
thought
I know
of
when
that.
She was like touring.
Who
she
did that?
Madonna.
Oh, really?
And I think she got, there was a
everybody talks about like, that. Like, oh, I feel so energized. I got a B12 shot.
Right.
B12 but who gives shots. You those? Where do I go for that?
Oh, God. Now there's all, I mean, you could probably get one from your doctor if you really had a medical reason, but there's all kinds of these places now where you can go and
Dr. Nick from Elvis's guy or what?
No. Okay. There's a place near us that just opened.
Oh, I'll go to Austin for one then.
Yeah, no, you have them in Chicago. Oh, okay. I'm sure is my point. Where you?
Yeah, they're in the they're in the back of a nail salon.
No, these places are legit. I just walked by one the other day, and
it was at the Hilton on the 7th floor by O'Hare.
No, there were a bunch of people sitting in there. They had their ACL festival bands on, and they're sitting there hooked up to IVs.
Reacting. Really? Oh, how scary is it? In between, they're taking the balloon helium or the nitrous oxide.
Whatever they were doing, they were trying to counteract it. Yeah, it was right. Good hydration. No, and they have like a sandwich board outside this place. It's right by my daughter's dance studio, so I walk by it all the time. It's new though. I just recently noticed it. And I'm like, maybe I need to check this
and it
place
says,
out.
And it says
B12. You can get like B12 shots. You can get just get like an IV drip where they put different vitamin combinations in it.
No, I'm not going to some strip mall.
Jim,
for
you
an
haven't
IV.
Been reading Goop lately. Okay?
No, you're right. There's
There's a whole wellness industry out there.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. You know. Yeah,
But this is where there's crossover with kind of the traditional medical community. Like, I'm sure they've got, they have to have someone on staff there who's licensed.
If I'm getting an IV, I want someone in scrubs, not in yoga pants.
Emergency room.
Not in yoga pants. with their nostril pierced.
Hey, if they have a licensed physician on staff there, I could get on board with it.
When did the nostril piercing comes back again? The nostril piercings. I'm seeing a lot of nostril piercings lately.
Oh, I don't know.
From the Generation Z.
I'm trying to think if any young people I know.
Oh my
gosh,
I was just at the airports, several airports, and I saw a lot of nostril piercings with either the little diamond stud in the nostril or the ring.
Yeah, you know those the little stud in the corner, those holes that they put there, those never close up.
Really?
I have a couple friends who have had them and they never truly close up.
Wow. Yeah, no, but I mean
you can always see them, a little tiny little
mark. Yeah, but I was surprised to see the nostrils being pierced again. You know?
Well, everything's coming back, Jim. Oh, I know. The 90s are back. Mom jeans are back.
Yes, right. Mom jeans, right. Isn't that hilarious? I mean, I love how they're 3 years ago, that was the scourge. And now everybody's wearing high-waisted jeans.
Oh, they love it. Yeah.
Now, the bad part is you can't see anybody's thong anymore.
Oh. You know?
The top of the thong.
Nobody needs to see that.
Well, and I don't know if you meant that as a great segue, but we will use that as a perfect segue because everything that does come back sometimes does not come back.
Maybe not, yeah.
And what I'm talking about here is, I don't know if anybody's been reading the newspapers lately, certainly in the pop culture world, But a couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, a new movie was coming out called Bros, and it was really being hyped because it was being labeled as the real first main... God, listen to that. Oh, my God. The mainstream gay love story of a rom-com for gays, unapologetically... No beating around the bush, no pun intended, just regular. It was a Rupert Everett and Julia Roberts film, only it's two guys now. Mm-hmm. And the trailers and the hype, the movie posters had two guys holding each other's butts. The trailers showed, guys kissing and everything, and there was no doubt about it. You know, in 2022, it seemed like, and this was a major release, I believe it was Warner Brothers, so it wasn't like some independent film. This was getting all the requisite kind of promotion and hype. It was a big hit at the Toronto Film Festival, which is a huge harbinger for films and big hit films if they do well. And the expectations, I mean, today's world is different, certainly in expectations for box office, because people still aren't going back in the numbers that they regularly were before COVID. Certainly they are for some films, if you've got Tom Cruise or
if it's a Marvel.
Yeah, Marvel or DC or Top Gun, then those are the only films that are really still making those $700-800 million things. But other films are struggling, and one of the casualties, surprisingly, even before COVID, but certainly now during COVID, is one of the most popular film genres of the last 25 years or so. And when I think of this genre, I think of Emily Armanetti. That's it. I mean, so that's why I had to talk to you. But the good old rom-com, the romantic comedy, the genre that made Julia Roberts a household name, and Bridget Jones, and you name it. It started really. I mean, what would you say? And I want to talk about Bros, but also I think there's kind of two things going on here, because Bros, to my point, it was expected to make maybe $10 million at its opening, which would be nothing 5 years ago.
Right.
But in today's world, $10 million for an opening would be pretty good. It made like half of that, if that.
Right.
And it was really considered a flop. And the writer and the star of the film, Billy Eichner, was not very happy. And he really made some very angry remarks about everybody and everybody who didn't come to see this film. And I want to talk about that whole part of it, too. But as we just talk about rom-coms in general, when would you say was like, because I've been looking in doing a little research for this, but I would say the rom-com basically started in the mid-80s, wouldn't you say? I mean, as a pure genre.
I mean, probably, but I feel like when rom-coms really, I'm not going to say this was the very first rom-com, because it wasn't, but when it really took hold and launched as a genre, it has to be When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah, that actually, on many of the lists, that was the number one movie,
right?
The number one rom-com, and that was 1989.
Right. So it's a little later than, when maybe they first started coming out. But I mean, I think that's what really launched this as a genre, and then, and then everyone was trying to make the next one, Harry Met Sally. And people were like hungry for, whatever was the next thing, right?
Well, and what I found interesting, I was looking at some lists online, and I never would have, I mean, it makes sense. When I think of rom-coms, to your point, I do think of the late 80s and beyond.
Yes, for sure.
But there have been romantic comedies. It's just in terms of a genre where it became like a patented type of thing, but there were quite a few in the 40s and 50s they mentioned many, like His Girl Friday with Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell, and things with Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn,
right? Yeah,
so there always have been romantic comedies, but so that's, I mean, this is not in the, and even going back to one of the earliest films with Clark Gable, It Happened One Night, so there's always been romantic comedies. But in terms of them, if it being this major where every week for several years there was a romantic comedy, coming out, and they mostly, especially in the 90s and in the early 2000s, they were all, not all, but many of them were just runaway hits, like Runaway Bride.
Oh, yeah. And, well, I mean, Runaway Bride, yeah. I mean, talk about Julia Roberts' entire career was built on
pretty much, right?
Romantic comedies. I mean, for the beginning, I mean, Pretty Woman is really, at the end of the day, a romantic comedy. I mean,
right,
I know it's
exactly.
Also sort of
and that was mid to late 80s, too, right? That was about 88, 87, 88.
Yeah, I would say late 80s. Possibly even 1990, I want to say. I don't know.
Yeah,
I was maybe in high school, I think, when that came out.
But that, yeah. So, I mean, think about, like I said, Runaway Bride, My Best Friend's Wedding, Pretty Woman, Notting Hill, and you actually have a your marriage is a rom-com.
Listen, this is why I think I can't figure out if you associate me with rom-coms because it's a genre I love, or if it's because you knew me in my 20s, in my dating, you know, when
right. I went through all your boyfriends.
My whole life was a romantic comedy.
Oh, believe me. Oh my God, I remember some of those.
Oh yeah. So,
my point is, you met your husband in Notting Hill.
I did. I met my husband when we were both living in Notting Hill.
Isn't that crazy? In England. It's basically a romantic comedy.
Yes, and I have to say, my husband lived on the most picturesque Notting Hill. It is probably in the movie, actually. I haven't watched that movie in a really long time, but I mean, at last time I watched it, I had already lived in London and I recognized a lot of spots. But I mean, he literally lived on the most picturesque Notting Hill street.
Right. How funny. Know? Yeah.
Yeah.
One time my wife and I, we had lunch or dinner with you guys weren't married at the time.
No.
But we were visiting London and I don't even know. Were we in Notting Hill? We actually may have been.
I don't remember where. I don't remember where we ate.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, I mean, that had to be 25 years ago.
Yeah,
it had to be. When did you meet your husband?
In 2003.
Okay,
spring of 2003.
Right, so that's almost 20 years ago. So, yeah. So yeah. My gosh.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So anyway, but
yeah, and so yeah, back then my life was a romantic comedy.
And it really was.
Not so much anymore. These days I'm not sure what it is. I'll have to get back to you.
You've been married for how many years now?
Is what?
How many years you've been married?
Oh, 14 years.
Okay. Well, the romantic is gone, but even the comedy is gone too?
Well, it depends on the day. I don't know, but I will say this.
Is it a romantic tragedy now or what?
Oh, yeah, we don't know yet. We'll see. We'll throw a couple kids into the mix and it totally changes the whole genre altogether.
Exactly. Nobody has kids in those romantic comedies.
I know, right? And recently I was actually watching, something popped up. I don't know. We were just home on like a Friday night and on the streaming services, it'll just pop up, like a movie will pop up, and that movie Contagion popped up.
Oh, right.
And that movie is like over 10 years old. But I thought, ooh, interesting. I'm just going to turn this on because I haven't seen it since it came out just to see what it's like through the lens that we're now
viewing
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I had to shut it off. I was like, too soon.
Oh, really?
Like, because it's eerie.
Yeah.
The stuff that they talk about in that movie and that they go through in that movie that like we can now all relate to in a way that we wish we couldn't. You know?
No, there's been a few movies and things that there have been references to like viruses.
Yeah. So and now it's like oh my it's God. Like I used to be like, you know, the How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, But now I'm like Dustin Hoffman in the hazmat suit.
You have this giant bubble on your head.
Yeah. So I don't even know anymore what the genre is. But, you know, we'll see where life takes us.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, and that's a good point. You know, when you think about, like I said, for the last, even though COVID has affected everything in our society, and certainly, for a good portion of a year or so, movie theaters in general were just closed. It's interesting when you say that, and when you think about that, is that when you look at the rom-com, which, you know, is for the most, you know, romantic comedy, which is basically, you know, it's very, the formula is never wavers. It's the same formula, right. You know, boy sort of meets girl. They don't like each other. They're thrown together.
Hijinks ensue.
There's got to be the comedy in the rom-com. And of course, the montage, and then someone's at an airport, someone's in a car, someone's getting on a plane, someone's getting on a boat, and then the other person's either running toward it or they're already on it by mistake, or, you know, so you know the formula.
Oh, of course. And honestly, there's nothing I love more than a good montage.
A good what?
Just the montage.
Oh, right. Oh, the montage.
The music.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's always
I love it.
A great pop song, a great, you know, like heart tugging, you know, ballad, power ballad, you know, by what's the Elizabeth Warren? No, she's no Elizabeth Warren runs for president. What? Could you imagine if Elizabeth Warren was writing stories or songs?
See, now we know what really killed the rom-com.
Yeah, when they got Elizabeth Warren, she's such a wet blanket.
They brought her in.
Yeah, she's always coming. Yeah, all her love songs were like, corporations are too big. They're putting down the little man. They need to pay more taxes. Yeah, and it's just like, it put a damper on the whole thing. Who's the composer?
Diane Warren.
Could you imagine Elizabeth Warren in a romantic comedy? I haven't heard from Diane Warren lately. So
she's still doing stuff, like an Oscar, even in recent years.
Oh, did she? Okay. Well, who even watches the Oscars anymore? My God, you can't. Well, yeah. It's either punches
another dying genre.
Yeah, I mean, they either announce the wrong winners or there's fights now. I don't know what's going on over there. But anyway, so you had this, but. You know, my point is that I wonder if they have lost some of their popularity and flavor just because they were in their heyday was in really in the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, everything was great. Not everything was great. I mean, the world has never been great, but, you know, we had a good economy and, you know, there was a lot of optimism, you know, that the tech boom was happening. We were going through a phase there where there was a lot of optimism and our economy was going well and the culture was going, you know, and so there was just a lot of optimism, at least in the United States. And so maybe, you know, and those films were corny and silly and mindless.
But they were feel good.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. But they fit perfectly into the way the culture was feeling.
Yeah.
And now I wonder if there's, because there's just so much kind of tumultuous and change and division that we look at this and it's like, you know, we always knew a rom-com wasn't real.
Yeah.
But there was a little, because there was an optimism in the country or the world at that time, even though it was a little far-fetched, there was, you almost, and you tell me, since you were right in that sweet spot in your age, and everything, it was almost like, but wouldn't it be cool? You know, it wasn't like, why did you watch a rom-com?
I mean, just for so many, there's so many, it's like eye candy, you know, there's always like, there's, you know, you got, like I said, you've got the musical montage, you've got there's usually like, I guess back in the 90s, like some of them started to focus on, you know, there's like some good fashion. It's obviously there's always going to be like two very good looking like leads, right? And there's just so much about it, but then there's also like there is that feel good element. There's that satisfaction that, like, you know, the odds are stacked against these people, and in the end, they're
it was like a fairy tale. They were like fairy. They were like modern day
fairy tale. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
But my point is, so as a young woman in that time, was, even though you, I mean, and you've got a fairly critical eye, so you can see through, you know that you're being manipulated. But at the same time, as did it also hit when you watched, you know, one of these movies, go, well, wouldn't that be great if?
What do you mean? Like to me?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, did you ever watch a rom-com and go, oh, wouldn't that be neat if that sort of happened to me?
Jim, I just told you my whole life was a rom-com. You were there.
No, but I'm just saying. So that was, but my point is that was,
you know, the idea that you know, kind of out of the blue, and sometimes maybe in like unique circumstances, you would just suddenly meet like the person of your dreams or something like that. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's an element of that. I don't think it's something I have that would have consciously, like, you know, been at the top of my mind.
But no, but I'm just saying that this, but I'm saying that in that era, you know, there was an optimism. And today I'm just wondering, because things are so just out of sorts, you know, we're just,
everything crabby.
Is so there's just an instability in everything. Yeah. And so when you see this, if you see a rom-com in its purest form, in all its manipulative and cornball, corny kind of stuff, it doesn't seem, I'm just wondering, In given where we're at now and that genre, it seems preposterous. Whereas in the 90s, it may have been just as preposterous, but not out of reach.
Okay, but Jim, think about it like this. The whole world has changed, not just in, you know, politically or like culture wise or whatever, like even just in general in dating, like, you've identified something which is totally true, which I had never really thought about. Like, it during the rise of the romantic comedy genre, you know, there's a whole generation, like my generation, who were firmly in that, you know, we were dating, we were on our own, we were outside, we'd moved on from our parents' homes,
building
careers, and a lot of this stuff is all intertwined, and a lot of this stuff is what you see in these movies. But if you think about it now, like back then, where would I meet a guy? I mean, I could meet a guy through friends. I could meet a guy at work. I could meet a guy at a bar. You know, there were so many like real life scenarios that could play out. On how are you going to make a rom-com that young people today can relate to? Like, what is it going to be? It's two people texting each other for weeks and weeks until they finally either decide to meet or not. Like, from what I understand, and I'm so grateful that I was dating during a time when dating was like functional.
Right.
Because now people just meet on apps. And then from what I understand, from what I've read and I hear people talk on podcasts and stuff about it, then there becomes this game of they don't even actually necessarily ever make plans to meet up in person. Now, you and I would find that really bizarre.
Right.
Because we dated during a time where you met someone, you liked them.
Right. You went out.
You know, you went out on a date, then you went on another date.
And right.
Now the people play this weird game where they sort of like message each other until they lose interest or they finally decide to meet up. But it's a whole new world. And it's not anything that, first of all, it's something that you couldn't even imagine as a storyteller. How do you even show that playing out on the screen in a realistic way that young people can relate to now? You know,
think about, but at the same time, and I think you're exactly correct, but think about You've Got Mail or Sleepless in Seattle, which were rom-coms.
Oh, right, where they're either email. Yeah, I guess that's true, but
I mean, it's not, I mean, but they're not to the extent there is today.
But it's, again, the dating culture now is different. People almost seem like they don't want to really meet up in person, you know?
Yeah, right. I mean, I've been married for so long. In fact, my anniversary is this week. But I mean, is it pretty much that's how people meet now?
Well, from what I understand, I mean, again, like,
I mean, if you're in your 20s, you're on an app.
Yes. I don't think people ever meet in real life places anymore.
Isn't that crazy?
I don't even think they contemplate that.
Well, because, you know, I mean, now think of your dating history, which is on, you know, the stalls of most bathrooms.
Oh. No.
It was too good. I'm just joking. But think of your dating history in terms of, I mean, you know, you could look at it one way and say, my gosh, look at how impersonal this is and look at how, but on the other side of the coin is, I mean, think about when you were at a bar, think about all the times a guy came up to you and you rolled your eyes.
Oh yeah, that happened a lot.
Yeah, well, you roll your eyes at everything. But
I did roll my eyes. I'm known for rolling my
eyes.
Oh
my God. I think of you for rom-coms and eye rolls.
I know.
So think about those situations that you were in, and the guy comes up and you're, oh my God, and you're doing this fake talk and you're hoping he leaves, and you're trying to, you have your arms crossed and you're giving every body language signal.
Right.
And you, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Well, my friend is calling me.
Right. My friend is calling me. We didn't have cell phones when I was like,
oh, that's right.
I didn't have a cell phone
How did you make your getaway?
Oh, God, I don't know. I don't remember. Actually, I had a friend who was she would always do this, and sometimes it would annoy me, but she would like see someone hitting on me in a bar, and she'd come grab my hand and say, don't talk to him. You don't know him, and drag me away. Even if I'd be like, I kind of liked him. But that's just what she was like, because she was like the group. She was like the protector of
right,
the group,
right.
You know? But, yeah. And she was also she still is one of the most blunt people I know. So, you have to look at, that's what you do. You had girlfriends that you all looked out for each other, you know?
So my point is, so the apps completely eliminate that hitting, you know, because now you're able to just look at these people and read about them. And let's be honest, and even when you went to a bar, you went to somewhere else, it was your immediate physical, attraction, right, that at least started you on down the road.
Right.
So here you are with, you know, you're just, you know, just, you know, swiping right. Or is it left? Is it right or left? I don't even know.
I don't know.
That's how old I am. I don't even know which way to swipe.
Right.
But you know, and so you just, you, so you're already, you know, go, you're eliminating that drudgery, if you will, to say, oh my God. And, you know, that was one of the reasons why I'm sure maybe you got tired of the dating scene. Like, oh, I don't want to go again and go through that, you know, that kind of, parsing of people in public.
Right.
Whereas here you do it in the privacy of your own home. You're swiping, 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 and today's Tuesday, and I swiped for 25 minutes and didn't find anything, I'll just swipe tomorrow.
Well, I also think, too, like, there's, like, two sides to it. I mean, one side is, like, people are posting pictures of themselves, right? So you're making a decision about, oh, do I want to, like, message this person based on, like, I don't know, a couple of photos that they put up? Listen, they could be putting photos that make them look like,
oh, of course. Oh, and you know, I mean, what are you going to put up, a bad photo? Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So there's that. But then the flip side of it is that I think attraction has to do with so much more than looks. Like, you can't really, a lot of it has to do with just actual chemistry, pheromones, things that cannot be communicated through an app,
right,
or detected through an app or through photos, you know? So I feel like young people are missing out on a lot, because if they rely mostly on apps these days to like kind of figure out who they're going to date and who they're not, you know, whatever, you're just like eliminating a bunch of people that if you were to just bump into them in a bar and start talking to them, you actually might be wildly attracted to them.
Right.
And it might not necessarily be based on like exactly what their facial structure is. But, you know, I mean, it's just an interesting thing. I think it's just, it makes me wonder how it's changed so many people's fates in a sense, you know.
Well,
but again, like I said, like, this is a generation that's like, it's a whole new world, is that you and I could never even get our heads around necessarily. Yeah. And we don't, you know, I mean, it's like, I don't know. And I don't know what happens to, I have friends who were married and then divorced and then did kind of do the dating app thing in the earlier days of date, like match.com, you know, not right. Like now we have a whole bunch
of eHarmony.
Yeah, I mean, Bumble and like all, you know, what, I don't even know any Tinder. And,
right,
and there's I'm sure there's a whole bunch of them out there, and they all have like a different, you know, angle on stuff. Like Bumble, for example, I think is for like men and women are on it, but I don't know if I think it's like men can't reach out to the women, but women are the ones who you just like decide who they want to date, something like that, or at least that initially was their, I think, their initial like value proposition. But, you know, they all have something that is their thing that differentiates them from the other. But the bottom line is it's still, it's a totally different world. And you also have to wonder about people who are older, who have been in relationships or have been married, who have to get back into the dating.
And that's how it's done now.
Right. And like, how do you, oh God, it's a whole minefield. So, I mean, it's just something that I think it's hard to relate to in a way from a storytelling perspective. And then I also think it might be hard for this younger generation of people to relate to these more traditional
relationships,
meet cute love story type.
Right. Yeah. Because you think about it, there's very few, you know, love story, you know, movies. I mean, you just don't see that. And if you do, they're on streaming services now. They are not at theaters because
that's the other thing.
Yeah. You know, so that's changed everything too. But, and so that's my point is that when you look at the, you know, this Bros film came out, you know, first of all, I understand the cultural, aspect of it. There's no doubt in the last 15 or 20 years that the gay lifestyle, the acceptance, gay marriage, first civil partnerships, now gay marriage. So there's no question the last 15 to 20 years, the entire gay lifestyle has gotten more acceptable in general. And we have gay marriage, and that was a huge leap. I mean, 50 years ago, you'd be thrown in jail. for even kissing, someone of the same sex. And now we're allowing them to get married. So there's no question that the gay agenda or the gay lifestyle, you want to call it, has moved forward and progressed. However, and so maybe it was like, okay, well, now is the time, right? To take that next leap. And what's interesting.
Well, I mean, I would almost argue that it was long overdue.
Oh, there's no questions it was long overdue. I mean, it's been long overdue for 50 years. I'm just saying is that in the last 20 years, we've seen that progress that has been overdue. I mean, going back to Stonewall and going back to Aristotle. I mean, we can go back, as far as you want. There's no question it's overdue. But so now it's arrived. The people in the gay community obviously want it to keep moving forward at a fast clip, and you can't argue with that. What am I waiting for? I want equality in every. So I have there's no qualms about that. I have no problems with that. But what's interesting is I think that this Bros film, which was as I said, unapologetically. Gay in every aspect. It was promoted that way. It was written that way. It was acted that way. Apparently, everybody in the film, even with the crew, were all LGBTQ, for the most part. Mm-hmm. So this was a fully embraced, film, as I said before, by a major Hollywood studio, not, an independent film. But I also think that in this divisive time, we are now seeing that as much as we have progressed, there might be certain aspects or certain pockets of the country that are very progressive and very understanding and tolerant. But we as a country, as a whole, we might not be as far along as we think or it may seem at times. So if you live in California, you think the whole it's completely embraced. But when you look at it as a whole, I mean, Billy Eichner came out, like I said, he wrote this and starred in it. And, he said, straight people did not come out and support this. He was very upset.
Right. He did say that.
Straight people did not come out. Then another couple of days came back. Well, I didn't make this movie for homophobes anyway. Then he was getting angry. And I just think that, he's coming from a perspective, which once again, I am not criticizing him from, but I just wonder in today's world, there's some people that may accept gay marriage. And in their minds, they are being very progressive. But they're not ready to go full tilt. And there's some people that are ready to go full tilt. And And once again, there's a good portion of the population that says, "Hey, look, I've already made a huge leap here. You know, yeah. to accept the gay marriage, and now you're and I'm having a little problems with it, but I'll accept it, and I'm still struggling with it, and now you want me to go another, and I'm not ready for that yet."
Yeah, but it's really hard. I mean, the thing about it is that, and I get what Billy Eichner is saying, because part of the marketing that he pushed, that he's been working on for this movie, is bring your straight friends,
right?
You know, which is great, and that makes a lot of sense. But the other thing that you just can't ignore, though, is that most movies don't do well at the box office these days, unless they have Tom Cruise or it's a Marvel film,
right? Yeah.
You know, so it's so hard to like, and I think his reaction was maybe a little strong because there was a high expectation for this film. And then people, for whatever reason, seemed to relish in writing about how it bombed at the box office, you know. And okay, maybe it didn't meet the financial expectations, but at the same time, it's gotten really good reviews.
Oh my gosh, it's gotten great reviews. It was great. You know, it's got 90 ratings in Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. It was, like I said, it was the hit of the Toronto Film Festival.
And I want to see it, but like, I'm not going to go to the theater to see it only because I don't go to the theater to see anything anymore. Like,
exactly.
And there are a lot of people out there who are just like me too. You know, like I can't remember the last movie that would compelled me. Oh, Scream. You know, we talked about right. this on a podcast a right. long time ago,
right.
but Scream is a movie that, you know, this is a franchise that I remember going to see the very first one, like the week it came out in the theater. And for the sake of nostalgia, you know, I went and I saw it. But, you know, right now it's like, for so many reasons, people aren't going to the actual movie theaters to see stuff. And a part of that too is, a lot of this stuff we can just stream in our own living room, and it feels just like it's just as satisfying. And so it'll be interesting to see, because now I think Bros either has been or will shortly be released on, like, is it Hulu or Netflix? I don't remember.
I think it's Peacock.
Oh, Peacock. That's right. Peacock.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting to see how it does. And I don't really know how the streaming services measure, but I'm certain that they have a way of measuring who's watching, you know, how many people right. are watching what. But it'll be interesting to see how it does when it's streaming and people can access it that way. Because this is a confluence of things, you know, that I think has affected the box office performance of this movie.
And it will be,
and I think that's one part of it that just can't be discounted, even though I understand where Billy Eichner is coming from. Totally.
Well, I think what will be interesting to see, to your point about once again, we're still, you know, people are still not going back to the theaters in droves like they used to. And if they do, it's yeah. for, you know, Spider-Man or Top Gun or, you know, Doctor Strange or whatever the hell, you know, the latest goofy thing is. Although apparently from what I'm seeing, the Dwayne, the Rock one is not getting very good reviews, Black Adam. So that's not going to help things. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so, you know, so you got a film. I mean, you can't see a drama at all at a theater. I don't even know if they even put them in theaters anymore. You know, a drama and is a hard sell. So most of those are going right to streaming.
Right.
To your point, because people are just in home, and that's it, you know, it's more gauged, sadly, I don't know why a poignant drama cannot be, you know, enjoyed by somebody in their 20s or 30s, but apparently they can't be. I mean,
well, there's also another element
because
here
they're not going to see it.
Well, there's an attention span thing too. And like, one of the more popular recent SNL sketches was the Pete Davidson, you know, Netflix rap thing, which is all about wanting a short movie. I mean, there's also that we have like a generation of people who they don't want to really get wrapped up into like a 2-hour thing.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it's like,
TikTok is 30 seconds.
some people, when they're trying to decide what to watch on Netflix, will actually just pick whichever one is the shortest. Like, so that just tells you something, you know. It's like,
yeah,
you know, there's just a whole lot of changing, you know, dynamics here. Like, And how can you expect people to have? I don't have the attention span I used to anymore, and we can thank smartphones for that. I mean, even people in our generation, and we didn't grow up with this technology.
But you just have to conform to it.
Yeah.
Because that's where the society's going.
And also the reality is some films just lend themselves more to theater. We did not have the access. Like, if we wanted to see a movie and we didn't want to wait forever for it to be on cable,
then you went.
We had to go to the theater and see it. Now, everything is streaming so quickly after it gets released, if it even gets released in theaters, fine. But you also, it's like, you know, I do understand why people who like Marvel films would prefer to see that on a big screen.
Well, they're made for it. Oh yeah, they're made for it. I mean, those movies are made to see it. And once again, a rom-com or a drama, doesn't need 5.1 surround sound.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need an 85-foot screen. To be enjoyed. Well, those other films certainly do. Although at the same time, you have to laugh because you go on an airplane and people are watching, Spider-Man 15 on their phone. So they're not getting the experience there either. But you know, what's interesting too is that when you go and now look at this, many films we have seen in history, certainly in the last 40 or 50 years, were not hits at all at the theater. But to your point about cable, because at that point, cable was the other alternative access point for movies.
Right.
As opposed, in addition to broadcast television, but cable certainly, without the commercials and everything, which are Showtimes and your Cinemaxes and things like that. But now streaming has taken the place of cable in many respects. So it will be interesting. I mean, if you look at a film, what I'm getting a kick out of, and it drives me crazy sometimes, because I was there, I sound like the angry old man again, in my day. But if you see films, I mean, it's so funny. There are films that were complete flops at the theaters when they came out in the mid to late 80s and early 90s, and now are considered great, iconic films, like Goonies. Goonies flopped. Goonies was a huge flop at the box office, to the point where people wondered if Steven Spielberg should make movies anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's not an exaggeration. A lot of these, like this movie, I don't know if you remember it, Weird Science, which was a John Hughes film.
I remember Weird Science. Yeah, I love Weird Science.
Okay, that thing, people, when that came out, people said, John Hughes is finished.
Yeah.
He is done. This is the worst movie ever, and his career is over. Now, Weird Science is this cult favorite. Everybody loves it. Love Actually was not a hit at the theaters. And now that's one of the all-time rom-coms.
Right. Oh, God, people love that movie.
I know. And so what I'm saying would be interesting here with Bros that might go through that same kind, to your point about no one's going to theaters to begin with, and then there's this cultural question about the type of genre. It will be interesting, to your point, not only how does Bros do in the next 4 months when it's now going to be available on a streaming service or even on video on demand and people get it in the privacy or in the convenience of their own home. But how will it even rate 20 years from now? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because
yes, I totally do.
20 years from now, the images and the perspective that it is portraying, I would assume, are going to be much more mainstream, much more acceptable in the next 20 years. And so that movie then will be looked at as either a groundbreaking film and a classic because it speaks to this and it won't be so strange. I never saw the trailer in the theaters because I haven't, like you, I haven't been to a movie in many years.
Right.
But apparently just the images that were in the trailer, which you can also watch online, but the images on the trailer were of men holding hands, kissing, playing frisbee, the whole rom-com genre.
Right.
And there were some movie theaters that said we will not play this trailer.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Well, but I'm just saying. So this is my point about the acceptance, and to your point, it's a really good point. You cannot undersell the privacy aspect. There, you know, to your point about, you know, Billy Eichner said, bring your straight friends.
Yeah.
There may be some people, even in today's world, where every commercial is an interracial couple, and there's an acceptance, and we see gay people, we see, you know, RuPaul's Drag Race, and we see men kissing and women kissing on television, on network television even. And so there's certainly a more tolerant, you know, aspect going on, but there still may be some people either personally or even a little afraid in their community to be going in and being in public, seeing a movie like that. They may feel more comfortable for the peer pressure or being ostracized by the community. I don't know. They might say, you know what, I'm going to wait until it comes. I'd rather watch it at home than publicly. If you go to see Bros at a theater, you are in some ways endorsing that film, right?
Well,
that lifestyle. And there might be some people who live in certain pockets of the country, like I said before, that aren't ready to make that public step yet.
Well, I think you're right. I think it does really depend on where you live. What type of community you live in. I think you and I have always lived in places that are, you know, we've lived in big cities.
Right.
They're more progressive, more liberal leaning. So I think it definitely, you're right. There will be pockets in the country where that is going to be a factor. I do think you're right too, that this movie, like many other really great films that flopped at the box office but then became classics, I think you're right. That very well could be in the future for this movie, and especially based on some of the reviews that I've read, that it actually is a really good movie.
Well, I think what has to happen, we were talking about how, you know, how the culture is in such, you know, just flux right now. Mm-hmm. And everything, I mean, like you were saying, the whole dating world is different, and there's so many perspectives and aspects that play into that, and that's just one part of. But I think we have to just, we're in a point now that we are in such an era of transition that we have to just. It's not easy because you always depend on and rely on these staples that you, you know, judge things on, because they've always been. But once again, I think we have to rethink the whole box office tally.
Oh, completely.
You can't, that used, I mean, since the 80s, since Entertainment Tonight started, and you can really pretty much trace Entertainment Tonight, when it first started in the late 70s or early 80s, even before Mary Hart.
Yeah, I was going to say, now you're going way back.
Yeah, oh yeah. But when that show started, and it was on every day, and everybody watched Entertainment, Entertainment Tonight, that's when, you know, they were just hard-pressed to fill a half hour, right?
Yeah.
With content. And so I believe that's where this whole cultural thing of how much, nobody used to know how much a movie made. Like a scorecard. But you know what? It was always, the scorecard was always there in Variety, in the movie, trade press. And I believe that when Entertainment Tonight started to say, hey, how are we going to fill this half hour? They're like, well, you know what? There's a weekly tally of the films. We could talk about, you know, we could list that as a little bumper before we go to commercials. And that's where that started. And now it's a part of the news. I mean, you watch your regular news, and before they go to commercial, they say, oh, and here's the top five movies of the week.
Right, yeah.
You know, so we got into this kind of scorecard of movies because it was, at that time, even before cable, or the early days of cable, it was still a powerful medium. But as we've been saying, we are so fractured in our platforms, and that's the word now, in our choices, that I don't know if it's fair anymore to judge a film success or flop by how much it makes at the box. We might have to that whole tally might just it may just be an anachronism. It's outdated.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah. So I'm it's going to be interesting. I mean, but I also do believe there is an aspect of this. I think if you live in a bubble sometimes, and or you just surround yourself with people that think and talk like you do, you get a false sense of reality. And believe me, as I said, I am not, my nickname is Elton Jim, right? Okay, the most famous gay guy in the world is my idol, right? Yeah. So you have to know where I stand. Yeah. But my point is, I also look at things from a realistic standpoint, and I do believe that, you know, yes, is the time right for this? In theory, it should be. But I just wonder if you were a religious-based conservative person, and I look back at a great line. I don't know. Did you ever watch Modern Family?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. There was a great line that Jay, you know, the older father, you know, to the gay guy with the red hair, you know, and Cam and Mitchell. Cam and Mitchell. And they were planning their wedding, you know. And they got into arguments, and one Jay was like, you know, how much more do you want me to move here? I'm trying to understand this, but you expect me to, you know, why can't you think, give me, you know, you're forcing yours on me, but I can't force mine on you, you know? And he was trying to be very honest, like, hey, I've already moved so much in my thinking, and you're asking me to move farther, and I'm not ready to move yet. And I just wonder, in terms of the entire acceptance of the gay lifestyle in some people's minds, it still might be, look, now what are you throwing at me? I'm not saying it's right.
But that in the Modern Family example, Jay is, I mean, he is from a totally different generation than even ours.
Right. Oh, exactly.
We're already like now on touch. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah, but my point is that there still might be, you know, very conservative or religious-based people that are saying, look, you know, the fact that I'm even tolerating this, you know, this gay, you know, I'm seeing guys, you know, gays walking, you know, gays and women, you know, hand in hand on the street and kissing and watching it on television and gay marriage. Okay. I understand and I'm trying to, and I'm accepting it, but, you know, now you're taking it into another aspect, and I'm not ready to go that far. As I said, if you're a homosexual, you're like, hey, look, we're here. We've always been here, and deal with it. I get the militant aspect of it. I mean, and the same thing with brown or black people. You know, what are we waiting for? You know, enough is enough. And I understand this, but you also have to realize that while change happens, it doesn't happen overnight. And so I'm just wondering, that's my point. In 20 years, this movie may be, you know, an iconic movie, but right now I'm just wondering, with so much transition, so much divisiveness, if it just was the wrong time. It's not the wrong message. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But they may have just miscalculated the time. They think that we're farther down the road than maybe we are. And I don't know. I don't know how you predict when the right time is. But I think you can see when it's not there. And I think that that's where this fell in. And it will be interesting to see how, to your point, how this performs in, you know, on the streaming services. And as I said before, it will be interesting to see how it becomes. A perfect example of a movie that once again flopped at the box office was Christmas Story.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that thing came out in 1984 in the summer. That movie, that was a
Which
summer.
Is wild when you think
Yeah,
about
that was
it.
A like, summer movie.
Why would they do that?
Christmas Story was a summer movie. Completely flopped. for 10 years. And then TBS started showing it.
Yes.
And that, and on, you know, and that's how it became a hit. And we can go back farther. It's a Wonderful Life came out in 1945 or 46. It wasn't until 1984 when it was on PBS and Channel 11 here in Chicago that was played every year that all of a sudden people discovered it. You know, so it will be interesting to see this, that, you know, like I said before, how this this plays. Because just as you said, it sounds like it really is a good movie.
Right. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to stream it.
You know, but figure out where I'm doing. So I'm just wondering now, I mean, do you think, I mean, I really believe that there will come a time in not too far future where at, like, say, you know, let's say the move, let's say 5 years from now, the movie business, you know, returns to some extent. People start going back to the movies on a regular basis. Or I don't know. Maybe they won't. I mean, who knows? Like you said,
with the this is the question. Yeah. I mean, we don't know.
But my point is, I bet you if there still are 30 screen multiplexes anymore, because that might become an outdated idea, right?
Right.
But I wonder if there'll be a point where there will not be anything but fantasy and superhero movies at the, that's because we're talking about, that's what those big screen and all the sound effects and the audio, the heightened audio are made for. Will there be a point where they won't even have a drama or a rom-com even play at theaters anymore?
Well, we've talked about this before. I mean, this is like not really that different than what the music industry went through in recent, you know, in the last kind of decade or so. I mean, unless you're like a hipster and you're out there looking for vinyl, when was the last time? You're a little different though, because you're a collector too. But when was the last time you actually held?
Oh, I know.
Some type of musical, anything in your hand, a compact disc, a cassette, an album. I mean, I don't have a record player. I'm not, you know, so right. I do get that that's like a thing now, you know, but in general, it's like, everything's digital. I haven't paid for a song in, I don't know how long. And so you can imagine what a huge transformation that whole industry has gone through, because certainly artists are still getting paid somehow, some way, or else they wouldn't be able to do it anymore, you know? But, and then, you know, and they go on tour, and I suppose that generates a lot of money. But, you know, I think the movie industry is grappling with a similar shift that they just need to get their heads around, like, how do they match up with what the current, what the consumer is doing and how the consumer is actually consuming their product?
Yeah. I mean, I heard a crazy stat. There's a singer-songwriter named Charlie Puth. Mm-hmm. You know who he is? And
Well, his sister is an actress, too.
Oh, is she? Oh, I didn't know that.
I believe that they're a brother and sister. She was in that movie, the one that Olivia Wilde movie that's getting
much. I don't think that, no, because his name is P-U-T-H, unless she spelled
it. I thought they were related. I could be wrong. Yeah. Could this be a rare pop culture moment?
I'm going to hang up on you now. Okay, it was fun to talk to you, Emily, and good luck in your life.
And that's a wrap.
So much for Pop Culture Club. No, but... No, I don't think so. I don't think. I think she spells her name P U G H. Yeah, and he's P U T H. But anyway, he was being interviewed, and he said, because they were talking about, just to your point, about how crazy the music industry is today. He said, and I'm sure he would know because he's, you know, in the midst of it. Because of the way music is distributed today. You know, online, TikTok, whatever it is, whatever you can do. He said on a daily basis, there are 70,000 songs that are put out every day on the internet.
Really?
From people doing it on TikTok. There's 70,000 songs a day. Now, to your point, 30 years ago, there were, you know, four or five major record companies and a few independent record companies. And on Tuesday, that's when the new albums came out. And yeah, just like on the theaters, okay, they've got their calendar, and on, you know, October 12th, these three movies will come out, and no, January 17th, and oh, we're going to save this one for summer, June 2020, you know what I mean? They've already...
Yeah.
Those kind of ideas and perspectives might just be out. I mean, the idea of an album, the idea of a 12 song, I mean, it used to be 10 because that's all vinyl could hold. And then once, you know, CDs came along, and now there's no, I mean, now that you don't, now the CD is out of, is obsolete.
Right.
So the idea of an album of several, to your point about, you know, attention spans, the concept of even an album is an outdated thing. I mean, now you just put songs out.
Right.
Nobody's, I mean, we still maybe listen to albums, and the baby boomer generation are still tied to that format because that's what they think of. But the smart ones have broken that thinking, and they just will put out a song. The idea of waiting, you know, 2 years to put out a song, you're off the mindset in 2 years.
Right.
And so, to your point, maybe movies just have to completely, not just rethink, but they maybe have to blow up the entire and start from scratch. Like, how do we release movies? What movies do we make? Where do they go? When do they, you know, I don't know, but this clearly, aside, as you're seeing, aside from, you know, the superhero movies that will draw in the 12-year-old boys and sadly the 50-year-old men,
right?
there's no formula anymore.
But I do hope it doesn't mean fewer films being made.
Oh, I know.
And great stories going
exactly
untold, because I still have the attention span to watch a movie, and so yeah. I just hope that they continue. You know.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I love movies, but when I'm looking around and I'm seeing what's being made here, I'm like, there's nothing that's, you know, I mean, there were some things where, you know, these movies were kind of almost life-changing, where they gave you a whole new perspective on, you made you think on, about things you never thought of before. And I think we're missing that, because the stories that we're telling, I mean, now are all wild fantasy. There's no reality being, you know what I mean? You couldn't have a play like Death of a Salesman today.
You can't have Kramer versus Kramer.
Exactly. I mean, that's a perfect example. Kramer versus Kramer. First of all, nobody even knows what you're talking about. They think you're talking about something from Seinfeld. Oh, I didn't know Kramer had a brother. You know, but there's a great example of a movie that really, and that was 1979. I guarantee you, there's some people that either forgot about it or don't even know what you're talking about.
Right.
And that movie today is as relevant today as it was in 1979, because it talked about something real and something relatable that was human. We are, the scary part is, we are not telling human stories anymore. We're telling superhero stories anymore. That's all we tell. You know, and so here's this movie Bros that we've talked about before that was trying to not only, you know, tell a realistic story, but then also a realistic story about a lifestyle that many people might not even, you know, might not even understand or know about, that will give you some insight. Like, here's, you may see us on TV or you may see us walking down the street, but here's what we do when we go home.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, once again, our whole society, you think of the 60s as being very, you know, tumultuous, but I think this era right now is 17 million times more. Everything's being questioned.
Aren't we so lucky?
I guess. To your point.
I'm joking.
No, but
I wish if we could go back to the 90s, I think I would. Just because it
well, would you want
to? I bet then, like then, to my parents, it didn't seem like, because they always talked about how the 50s were a simpler right. time.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about the 90s,
right?
Now, the 80s and the 90s.
Would you want to be 23 years old right now?
Well, that's the thing. I would want to be 23-year-old me in 1998, but I wouldn't want to be 23-year-old me in 2023.
I know. And but the funny thing is, if you were 23 years old, Emily, in 2022, you wouldn't be Emily.
Right.
You know what I mean? You couldn't yeah. be who you are.
Exactly.
So that's the thing. It's like I'm looking. I've got some friends who have you know, kids in their early 20s, and I was like, wow, you know, they just, in passing. Oh, they did this, they did that, and I'm like, I don't even know how I would navigate it. But at the same time, if you were in that age, you would navigate it.
But Jim, I think you just thought of the next great idea for a modern rom-com.
What's that?
Middle-aged woman brought back as her 23-year-old self in modern times.
There you go.
Now no one's gonna make the film.
No one will. We'll see. And that's the other
great idea.
And that's in there. I'm gonna write that.
There's an idea there.
There you go.
There's an idea.
But you know what? The other side of the coin is, I think one reason why Billy Eichner was so militantly upset is because. Now, if this, you know, it wasn't even just his film. I mean, certainly it was a personal, you know, film for him. He wrote it and starred in it, and he was trying to be historic and trailblazing. I think that he and everybody around it felt like they were doing something that was going to be, you know, just groundbreaking film and historical, and that's the way they were selling it. And now it's proven, at least at this point, like we said, not to be the case. It could be in the long term. We'll see. But also in the short term, what it probably does, and that's probably too why is being him being a gay activist. What major studio now is going to green light another gay film like that? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, yeah, that's the yeah.
Now they're going to say, look, I'd love to do this. It sounds great. But look what Bros did.
Right. And that is what will be, because I think you're right. I think Bros has potential to still be groundbreaking in the long term, but it will be highly disappointing if it means fewer stories like this are told rather than this being paving a path, you know. So,
and you know the way Hollywood thinks, they think in dollars and cents. So, I mean, and if somebody's on the fence, they can now use the Bros, box office failure as their out. Hey, look, I'm not a homophobe, but you know, that even if this person was right, let's say this studio head was a homophobe, right? He can get off the hook by saying, "Look, I'm all for this, but look at what this movie did at the box office. I can't give you $40 million for this."
Yeah.
So it gives a homophobe or whatever you want to call somebody that doesn't want to get involved into that genre a convenient out. Whereas before, if that movie would have opened big, that they don't have that. Now what's the argument? Now you are a homophobe or you are racist because the facts are that there is an audience, but now they can point to say, well, there's no audience for this. You may think it is, but it's still fringe. And whether it really is fringe or not, I don't know if that's the case, because as I said before, in general, people aren't going to movies, period.
Yep.
So we'll see. But I was very impressed by you pulling out Harry Met Sally out of nowhere. Nice job. Nope.
What?
That's well, no, because it's an older film, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
I would have thought you would have. No. Well, it's 1989. My God, it's over 30 years old.
You thought you would have thought I would have said Clueless.
Oh well, Clueless is. I would have.
Well, that's
I,
obviously on. The,
yeah,
a great
I would have
one.
Picked. Yeah, I would have pegged you for a, a Runaway Bride or My Best Friend's Wedding,
mm-hmm.
or a Clueless. Let's see. What else?
I'm really more of a how to lose a guy in 10 days.
Oh, really? Now, yeah. How about Bridget Jones?
No? I liked Bridget Jones, but I wasn't as into it as I didn't think it was as phenomenal as everyone else.
Oh,
did.
Interesting.
And
oh.
I like Renee Zellweger too. I really do. But
what about like Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Yeah, I wasn't really that into that. Actually, like speaking of Renee Zellweger, I mean, Jerry Maguire, which I wasn't that into at the time, but I have more appreciation for it now as I'm older. And then also, actually, one of the classics I can't even believe didn't come to mind.
What?
Say another Cameron Crowe film. Wait, speaking of
Jerry Maguire. Say Anything.
Say Anything.
Now, you know what? Here's the other thing. Say Anything was not a big hit when it came out.
I will say I remember seeing that movie in the theater, but again, I was also squarely in the demographic of like.
But that
movies every weekend.
That movie was known more for its
soundtrack,
probably.
Yeah,
because of In Your Eyes, you know, the Peter Gabriel song.
Well, that whole soundtrack is.
Well, yeah, I have that soundtrack definitely, but
you know, the image of Lloyd Dobler standing in the rain with the boombox over his head is obviously now iconic.
It is, but it's now iconic, but it wasn't then. That movie, that's another movie that had that found another life later, and I mean, people don't even know that John Mahoney was in that movie.
Oh my gosh, he was so good in that movie.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it wasn't like that made him a star.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And, you know, and Ione Sky didn't become, you know, she didn't become Molly Ringwald after that.
Right.
You know? But now, I mean, to your point, the key that you just said, you didn't say John Cusack holding the boombox. You said the character's name.
Yeah, Lloyd Dobler.
Right. I mean, that's that when you do that, that was a key. You don't even realize. I can hear you in your voice. You don't even understand. I would not have said that. I would not. I when I say that, I say, oh, it's John Cusack holding up the thing, because I didn't see that movie when it first came out. And I listen, and I don't even know if I've ever seen the whole thing, to be honest with you, from beginning to end.
Oh, come on.
No, but my point is, you know that character's name. When I would describe that scene of him outside of her room with the boombox, I always say John Cusack. You said the character. That's how invested you were in that film.
Well, it's a great film.
I understand that, but that's the difference. But my point, you know, because we're not the same age. I'm probably 10 years older than you. But that's a major. But that's a major 10 years too. You know.
Yeah.
So. And there was things that I mean, the funny thing is that we share, like in those 10 years, we share the same recognition of things. You know, we were both around at the same time.
Yeah.
But your appreciation of things and my appreciation of things during that time are different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember the film, but I didn't go see it. Right. You saw it, because when I looked at it, I said, oh, that's just some, you know, because at that time I was in my early 20s and I'm like, oh, that's just some corny, you know, romantic
movie for teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with Goonies and same thing with Weird Science and all the other stuff. You know what I mean? Because I'm looking at, well, I'm looking at Woody Allen movies. You know what I mean?
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And just the opposite. You're like, oh, I'm Woody Allen. What the hell am I going to do with Woody Allen? You know, when I got Molly Ringwald here and John Cryer and Andrew McCarthy. I mean, and Rob Lowe. I mean, what am I going to do with Woody Allen? You know, so, but they all came out at the same time. And yet we, you know, we had different reactions and different, and different appreciations for those things, even though we both knew they existed. Your view, when you said, once again, I can't remember his name now. What's his name?
Lloyd Dobler.
Yeah, see? I say, because I do reference that quite a bit, because it is it's an iconic image, and it's a great moment. But I always say John Cusack. I never say Lloyd what?
Lloyd Dobler.
So So that and that's a rom-com, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's considered a rom-com.
Yeah, yeah, and we one thing we forgot about the rom-com too. We did say it to some extent, but it also it did have to have a great soundtrack.
Well, like all Cameron Crowe films.
No, but I mean every rom-com had to have.
Yeah, they have to have.
Some, they had to have yeah. a really at least one hit song or, you know, some. They and a lot of time what was interesting too is they would those rom-coms were actually very influential in bringing back songs from the past to a new generation. A lot of times they had older songs like in the 90s they would have songs from the 60s or the 70s that people never heard before.
Well, you know what song along those lines is on the Say Anything soundtrack? Ricky, Don't Lose That Number.
Is it really?
Yeah, there's a great scene in the film when John Mahoney is actually driving his car, singing along to that song on the radio.
Oh, how funny. See, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, and that used to be a kind of a cool. I mean, think about now, how old were you? Well, this is probably, you still were aware, you were young, but you remember Big Chill, right?
Like, vaguely, but that's a movie that I don't think, I remember my parents talking about.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was right up their alley, right?
I think I've seen like scenes from that movie, but really? I don't think I've seen that movie straight through. No, I don't.
Isn't that funny? You've never seen, wow. So even that, so, oh, okay, interesting, because that was about 83 or 84. So, oh, interesting, because that movie is pretty much responsible for the entire kind of resurgence of Motown. Motown was pretty much looked at as, you know, that was 20 years ago back then.
Right.
And that soundtrack was about a bunch of ex-hippies that got together now in their 30s and, you know, late 30s, early 40s. And when they got together for this little retreat for a weekend, all they were playing was all their Motown songs.
Yeah.
And that soundtrack was more popular than the movie was. There was like,
yeah, I do remember. I feel like
there were two volumes. There were two volumes of that soundtrack.
But was it the one? What was the one that played in the trailer? Was it I Heard It Through the Grapevine?
Yeah, Grapevine, or you know, and I Know You Want to Leave Me, Refuse to Let You Go.
Yeah.
Ain't Too Proud to Beg.
Ain't Too Proud to Beg. That's right.
Yeah. And they were all dancing to that. And but that whole soundtrack, it has Grapevine. It has everything on it. And then it was so popular that they even put a volume two of songs that I don't even know if they were in the movie. But I just wanted to capitalize on the big
Inspired
chill.
Inspired by the movie.
Exactly. The yeah. That's how big that was. So that's and you can almost kind of. You could almost categorize that as a rom-com too in some aspects, because it did have a few of the, you know, the formula of the rom-com, but it wasn't an overtly comedy movie.
Yeah.
But once again, it always, I mean, Runaway Bride had a couple of big hits on it, right? And didn't Notting Hill. I remember getting all those soundtracks.
Yeah, Notting Hill. I don't remember if Runaway Bride.
Yeah,
did.
But
because their whole gimmick there was bringing Julia Roberts and Richard Gere back together, right?
Yeah.
In Runaway Bride,
exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
But certainly, Pretty Woman, you know, had a
well,
bunch
yeah.
of songs
I mean, that's
in it
a great. Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of good songs on that.
Well, I don't know if we. I think I don't know if we've changed anybody's views, or hopefully we've made people think. But it's an interesting phenomenon that here was this. It seemed like the rom-com would be a perennial, that it was here to stay. And just like everything else in today's world, it is just, you know, everything's up for grabs. I don't know. It's a weird time. And I just wonder when is it not going to be weird anymore?
Oh, Jim.
I mean, think about it. You got COVID this year.
Yep.
You didn't get it when it was at its peak. You did not get it.
Nope.
You got it when supposedly, according to President Biden, it's over.
Right.
So how interesting is that? So, I mean, you know darn well that we're going to still be talking about COVID in 2023. And on.
I just got a chill down by spine, up by spine. I don't know what the right phrase is.
But I mean, I don't know about you. Now, you said you were recently, you know, in an airport. I was too.
Yeah.
I was still wearing my mask. And I said 3 years ago that I'm going to keep wearing this mask in public. When I go to the grocery store, I still wear the mask. I don't think there are, when I go to a grocery store, and I maybe one or two people, if that. Because even the cashiers don't wear the masks anymore.
Yeah. Not a lot of people do. But I also live in Texas, so.
Yeah, but I still do, and I still think, and I said that I may be wearing that mask for a good 5 years, if not longer, in public places. And I'm the first to admit that I used to laugh when I used to see Asian people wearing those masks.
Well, but, you know, this is part of society.
But it's now you understand why, because they went through it. And those SARS viruses are all over the place in China.
Yeah.
And we would go, what the hell is that? Give me a break. You're being so overdramatic. And now it's like, I mean, when I go to the grocery store, I get out of the car and I put my mask on. I see people looking at me like, what are you, weird?
I think they probably just assume you have COVID. And you're like, oh,
so well, is that the assumption?
Well, I mean, I guess that either that or, you know, yes, there are people who still, whether they have a compromised immune system or they live with someone who does, and you want to make sure you're being cautious. But I think now, because of the guidance, where it's like, okay,
yeah, whatever.
And I don't even know.
Yeah, what is the guidance?
Well, I don't know. I mean, the last time I kind of focused on it, it was sort of like, well, I mean, I had to because I had it, right? So I had to know when I could re-enter society. It's like if you are like a certain number of days in, I think it's 5, and they tell you when day 0 is. You can come out of isolation, but you must wear a mask, which is the reason why I think if you jump out of your car and put a mask on, some people might think, oh, that guy's got COVID, but he's got to go to the store. So he's
okay. So then in other words, if I do get,
but I could be wrong. I mean, again, I live in a part of the country where people haven't been wearing masks for a while. Yeah. So,
but I guess my question is then, if I do feel ostracized by the community or the peer pressure, because I won't take it off.
Well, I mean, I'll be honest.
But can I just say, if someone, like, say someone confronted me, no one's ever done that. But if someone came up to me and said, what the hell is that? You know, what do you, take your mask off.
People shouldn't do that. I mean, after
I know,
all,
they shouldn't do a lot of things.
That shouldn't even be a question.
No, but I could probably say, well, I have COVID, or I just got over COVID and I don't want to give it to you.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's, of course you could say that.
But even if I don't.
I personally don't think it's weird if I see people wearing masks.
Yeah,
and
but
I
you're,
feel like there
know.
Are a lot of people out there who are
but
like,
but you're not a proud boy.
No, I'm not. No. But hopefully you don't have too many proud boys at your local Jewel.
Well, you never know. You never know.
That's true. You never do know.
You know, proud boys got to eat too.
I certainly hope not.
Yeah, me too. But, you know. But anyway, well, Emily, once again, it's always a pleasure. And
always a pleasure.
Yes. And I hope you don't feel, you know, ever since COVID happened, you know, at the beginning, it was a weird time. So, I mean, I would love to talk to you more often. So, I'm not, this has not been anything. I've just felt like maybe you've been busy, or then the COVID hit and it was just easier not to to do that. But if you'd like to be to do this more often, please just,
I would love to. I'm always here for you, Jim.
Okay, good. Well, that's good to know, because please, I hope you don't feel like I just lost interest or I forgot about you, because that's certainly not the case. But it was just earlier, you know, when the COVID hit, it was a weird time, and you know, and so it was just kind of like, oh, you know, that type of thing. And then you fall into that trap. So I certainly will. When I thought of this, I was like, my God, I got to call Emily.
Well,
so,
of course.
But if you have, but once again, please don't be afraid. If you have any topics that you think, you know, hey, did you think about this? You know, just send me and we'll do it. You know, so please, it goes both ways. Okay.
Yeah. I will take you up on that.
Yeah. No, please do. Because I, as every time I talk to you, I remember how much I enjoy it.
Oh, thanks, Jim.
And believe me, I've had a lot of people send me emails saying, "Where's Emily?" So you should.
Oh
know.
My gosh! Well, tell them I am alive and well.
Yes. Yeah, so they're like, I love the podcast.
No,
but I
no
also...
longer a super Dodger, but alive and well.
No, a lot of people have said, "Oh, I'm enjoying the podcast, but you know, also enjoying Emily's on too."
You so... said Emily's hiding in her closet under a blanket with a mask on. What do you mean? Where is Emily?
Till COVID is over.
Right.
Yeah. But well, I think I'm going to take my COVID test right after I finish.
Well,
this.
Good luck with that.
Oh, I know. So now what do I do?
I look very forward to you denying your own COVID status when the test comes back, obviously positive.
And what did you say? So it's 5 days from day one?
It's like,
because at this point, I can't even tell when day one is.
I don't know. Listen,
I might be a day 28.
Yeah. Listen, all you can do is take the test. Okay.
Yeah.
Take the test. If you get the little.
Oh
the
my
double
gosh.
Strip. If you get the double strip, call
oh,
me.
Oh, I
I'll
hate the double. You know what's so
I'll
funny?
Talk you through your timeline.
You know what's so scary was I took one probably. Well, I took one. You know, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, when this person and these two people in the play, you know, came down with it, and to make sure that I didn't have it, which really would have been. I mean, because I had the lead role in that. I don't know what would have happened if I would have had it. They probably would have to close the show. Because
if you're the lead.
Well, yeah. I mean, because I didn't have an understudy. Thankfully, the two roles that, you know, were small roles and they were able to find. The director had to actually fill in for one of the roles. But so that was the last one I took. And so it's been a while since I took a test because I wasn't feeling sick at all for a long time. And so, you know, you have to do like every test is different. You know, some you have to have six drops. The other one you do two drops. Listen to that voice. The other time you do three drops, and then you have to get it right in that little hole with the dropper, and they all have different droppers. You know, how come they can't be the same? You know. Why can't there just be a unit? You know, if that's fine, if everybody wants to make it, you know, you can make them with a different box. But why are they all different? The tube is different.
Yeah, just make them all the same, then we don't have to read the directions.
Yeah, oh, because those directions are ridiculous with all the pictures, and you're like, was it six drops? Is it three? So I didn't know if the first drop I did didn't actually hit the hole correctly. It hit the side, but it dripped in. So now I'm like, well, does that count?
Oh, you're like me.
I'm like, now is that a drop? So oh I'm like, God. Well, I don't think that's a full drop, you know. Yeah. So now I give it another drop. So then,
you give it another half drop.
Yeah. So yeah, and then try to do a half drop.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I don't know if you remember because the last time you took one, but what happened? At least the test that I had, that little, you know, the little area that you read, and obviously I never took a pregnancy test, so I'm new at this.
Yeah.
But you know, and I don't know how those work, but with that COVID thing. So first, this one, like the whole thing became pink.
Oh.
Like, yeah. Like whatever that, you know, when you closed it up, you know.
Yeah.
The whole thing got wet.
Okay. No, I think that's supposed to happen.
I know, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that. Okay. So I'm like, oh, I put too much in. It's overflowing. So I'm like, oh, so now I'm like, I got to go get another one, right?
Oh, no.
So meanwhile, so now I go to get another one, and while I go and get the other one, I come back, and then I notice it's white now.
Oh.
So I'm like, a good thing I didn't open the other one.
Yeah.
Because then it became
once
white.
Once you open that, yeah. It's
yeah. So then it was white, and then the line came, and it was fine. But at first, I went, oh, I ruined it, you know, because, you know. So I'm just like... And I remember that first time I was in such denial that, I mean, there was this faint second line, you know, because when you take that test, you see that first line.
Okay, here we go with the faintness.
And then but my point is you're praying that second line doesn't show up.
Yeah, I know. And
you know?
It does.
I know. And so when I saw this one, like I think I may have told you this even a couple, you know, like early in the year, I took a picture with the cell phone.
Oh, geez.
So I could read, because I'm like, my eyes don't, I don't trust my eyes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so I took a cell phone and then I blew it up. And I'm like, son of a bee, it's faint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, although I must say now, you know, I had my cataract surgery, so now I have x-ray vision. I have the greatest vision. Good. It's unbelievable. Good for you. I love my eyes now. But God, you know, I'm afraid when that, to watch it. Like, did you watch it or did you walk away from it?
Well, when I got sick, the first test that I took was negative.
Really?
It was totally, it was like on a Monday night, I think. It was totally negative. And so I just thought, oh, I must have like a cold or something else. And then the next morning I woke up and I felt like 10 times worse.
Oh, okay.
And I took another test. And it was like, I didn't even have time to put the timer on. It was like, you know,
in the second
line. It was like flashing. It was like glowing.
That's the worst.
Oh my God. It was like immediate.
That's the worst. Yeah. Like I said, lines were.
I mean, it was like no question. And it was like, there truly was not even like it immediately, the line immediately.
See, because the other thing too is like when I saw that second it was so faint. It was the faintest of faint lines. I felt like maybe it was like,
line is a line.
But I thought, no. See, because I thought I looked at the sun.
No.
And then looked down, and I thought I was seeing sunspots. I'm like, you know what?
You're a new kind of COVID denier. You don't deny that COVID is real.
No.
You just are in denial that you've had it.
I don't want to think that my body is vulnerable.
You know what? It's on. You're on the record now. You have you've had COVID. You cannot. This
but I have all permit? These. I have all these. I have 9 booster shots.
It's,
I have,
and it's. It, I know we all do.
They gave me another card. I have 2 cards.
You have 2 cards. You ran out of room. You have like a passport book.
I do. I have cards. Stamps.
Okay, but it's
it says Walgreens, now, okay? Loyola.
I'm sorry to tell you, this is part of your permanent record.
No, she really did me she did give me a new card. I have another card. I have 2 cards now.
I believe you. Yeah. I believe you. I mean, hey.
Oh, unbelievable. But anyway, yeah, because maybe I just have a bad flu. But I don't even know what flu is. Like, what is the flu?
Well, there is a test that you can get that tells you if you have influenza A, influenza B. It's the same deal. They swab your nose. Yeah, you go. I mean, you can't buy it out over the counter.
Because I don't have a fever. I'm not nauseous. I'm not achy.
Yeah,
I'm just really congested.
Well, you probably have you could just have a head cold.
Yeah, I must have it just, but
because I would say flu usually involves some fever, some achiness.
But you know what's funny?
Maybe even some nausea.
When I go out, I'm not congested.
Maybe you're allergic to something in your house.
Maybe
you've developed an allergy to cashmere woods.
But that can't even be true because now I'm just using pumpkin spice.
That's right. Oh, I forgot. I do. You're on to the pumpkin spice.
Oh yeah, it's after October 1st. We're in full metal jacket of pumpkin spice.
Oh my God, my James, the other day I was in the grocery store with him and he grabbed this box of Twinkies off the shelf.
Oh, they have that. Yes.
Because I think he's only ever had Twinkies once because I went to an 80s themed like party and they were giving out Twinkies and I brought them home for the kids. And I was like, oh my God, here's something from my childhood you've probably never had. So it's kind of weird that he even noticed this. We grabbed this box of Twinkies off the shelf and he's like, Mom, we should get these and, you know, bring them home. And I looked at him, I go, James, those are pumpkin spice Twinkies. Mm. Oh, we both were like, oh. But so now pumpkin spice has infiltrated every part of our society such that it's in Twinkies now.
Hostess cupcakes.
Oh.
I am so tempted. See, I don't want to get the Twinkie.
That is not even tempting.
No, because it's got the little white in the middle.
Oh.
Oh. No.
Disgusting.
Oh, I just had the Oreos. Oh.
No.
The Milanos.
There aren't really pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin Oreos. Spice Oreos, definitely. They have they have the yellow cookie and then they have the pumpkin spice in the middle. Go to the store.
Okay. Well, I'm diagnosing you right now because it's more and more clear this is an allergy to pumpkin spice.
I bought the Pillsbury pumpkin cookie dough and I'm not even cooking it.
Oh,
Because you says you can eat cold. Oh, I'm having God. And they're already pre.
Oh, also, I'm diagnosing you with salmonella because you probably have that too.
No, they says you. They said this is you could eat it cold. It's not like that. They want you to eat it. I'm actually they're preformed like cookies, so it's not like in a tub.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm dunking that in milk.
Oh God.
I just bought Entenmann's Poppins.
You're about to have a whole bunch more medical problems that you don't even know about yet.
Swiss Miss.
Oh my God.
Pumpkin Swiss.
You're creating a pipeline of health issues for yourself. And you're worried about your little health.
I can't stop. I love pumpkin. You know, it's the worst thing though. It's funny. I'm like, whatever I see, I buy, and then they're horrible. None of them have lived up to, and to be honest with you, none of them have lived up to my expectation.
Of course Oreos, not. They're disgusting.
Yeah, the Oreos were not good. I was very upset. I had a couple and I threw it out.
You threw the whole thing away.
Yeah, because I'm like, I'm not gonna eat stupid calories here.
Right.
And the Milanos were okay, but I wasn't crazy about them. Now we did make. I did eat one of the raw, you know, because I do love dough.
Oh God!
But then we did cook them, and they were terrible. And I was like, "This is a pumpkin cookie. Why isn't this good?"
But why you're not?
So actually, it's as if I went to Mariano's and just had a little free samples.
Yeah.
I've wasted a lot of money because I'm throwing everything out.
Yeah, you need like a GoFundMe for your pumpkin spice ones.
So
I'm going to start one.
Because you can't taste it. You know, you can't just taste one. You know, you got to buy the whole box.
I'll be like, well, Elton Jim can't pay his bills this month because he spent all his money on pumpkin spice.
But there's some things I haven't bought. Although I must say the pumpkin swirl Thomas's bread isn't bad. I swear to God, every time I go to the grocery store, I bring back. In fact, it was so obvious one week that the bagger goes, "Wow, you like pumpkin."
Oh, oh my God!
Because there was like three I have to say this is true. The Yoplait pumpkin caramel yogurt is very good.
That sounds totally disgusting.
No, that one is
good. I don't even think I can eat lunch now that you said that.
In fact, when I go to the grocery store, I take all of them. Like there's like seven or eight in the little, you know, like in the cooler.
Yeah.
Take them all. If you go to the store and you want to get pumpkin, the store I go to, if you want to get pumpkin caramel Yoplait, you better get there before me because it's gone.
And you're an early bird, as I recall. You like to get things done early.
Oh, yeah, so. Right. That's about the only one that has been a constant. Even like, you know, do you ever have those Lar bars?
No.
Yeah, you never had a Lar bar?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, really? It's all made of natural ingredients. It's okay. A Lar bar. It's very, you should try it. That one was.
I don't like to eat bars. Is it like a protein kind of bar?
Well, I don't know if it's it's all natural.
I don't
know.
Eat bars. I think
you don't eat Kind bars?
No, because those things are marketed as being good for you, but they're actually at the end of the day just junk.
Oh yeah, there's chocolate all over them. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't eat any bars.
No.
Not a Belvita?
I have had a Belvita, but only in dire circumstances. Like if we're traveling and we've been rushing through airports and no one's been able to eat.
Because I was disappointed in the pumpkin Belvita. I even got that.
Are you seeing the trend here? None of these things are living up to your expectations.
Well, I have to say, the Glade pumpkin spice is good, but I don't eat that. I just smell that.
Well, listen, I've told you this before. I'll say it again. I don't even go to the pumpkin patch, and I have small children, okay? But somehow I have managed to avoid the pumpkin patch several years in a row.
There was a... Whoa, I'm sorry. What was that? Hold on, what did I hit? What the hell is that? I went online at, like, in late September, you know, to see what would be out there. And there was a story about 32 new pumpkin things. So I wrote those all down.
Oh, come on.
And so I have been, I have, when I go to the store, I go, I have the list. And then I see if I want to try any of them. Like, see, what I haven't tried is the pumpkin Cheerios, because I'm not a big Cheerio fan.
Okay. The fact that there are that many pumpkin.
I know. And there's probably more.
Things just tells you that the, I mean, you, this is just simple, like, is it statistics? Is it percentages? Whatever. I've never really been a math person, but you just have to know the vast majority of those are going to be terrible.
Yeah,
they're not going to be good.
But why? Why aren't they good? Why can't they put... Well, the thing that's missing is they're not really... I'm not getting that pumpkin. And I'm like, why? Why put extra? What do you... Why is it... It's almost there. I like a good pump... You know, the funny thing is I don't do pumpkin seeds.
Well,
but I love
really...
pumpkin pie. I love pumpkin pie. See, nothing. See, that's the problem. Nothing. I love, you know, 'cause pumpkin pie is very concentrated, you know. So that's, and I'm not tasting anything that's close to the strength of the pumpkin taste, like
because
the pumpkin
pie.
Because
I think they're just trying to give you the essence.
Yeah, and I and that's
you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think I'm. I mean, I'm kind of done, guys. I'm getting too burned here because and plus, you know, this stuff is all limited edition, so it's all very expensive.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, did you ever
That's
hear of,
why I'm starting the GoFundMe for you.
Yeah. Did you ever hear of Tate's? Tate's cookies?
Yes, I do know what those are. Yeah.
Okay. I never heard of Tate's, but I bought them because they have pumpkin.
Yeah. People really love those cookies.
I guess they do because I brought them back and my wife goes, hey, where'd you get Tate's? I said, they got pumpkin. She's like, well, you know, they have other flavors. I never saw these before. I just, when I go now, my eyes, because of my my cataract surgery, I am just focused on any kind of orange packaging. I mean, I should have like those sunglasses, like, you know, when like, you know, those blue blockers.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I, when like I have infrared glasses when I go to the store, but all I see is orange.
Right.
And then I go right to that. So, you know, the one I'm thinking, I wish they would make though. Pumpkin Nutella.
Oh, pumpkin what?
Nutella.
Oh my God. That sounds repulsive.
Oh, would that be good? I would eat that with a spoon.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I would eat it with a spoon. Nutella, if you're out there, once again, $1 million idea. Okay. Anyway, well, I got to go because now I'm going to have to see what pumpkin stuff I have to eat. But
good luck,
thank you so much. I'm glad you joined us. And if I don't talk to you before the holiday, have a great holiday. Hope you have pumpkin pie at your Thanksgiving table.
We'll see. We'll see about that.
Or if not, I hope you have some pumpkin Oreos at least.
Yeah.
Or some pumpkin Milanos or some pumpkin Pepperidge Farms.
I think we know you will.
Or some, let's see, what else did I get? The pumpkin Swiss Miss I wasn't crazy about either.
Oh, geez. This gets worse and worse.
And there's some things I haven't gotten yet. There's still a few things. Yeah, the Chobani, I wasn't crazy about the Chobani either. Chobani had yogurt. I wasn't crazy about it. Anyway, thank you so much, Emily. Bros, I will actually be interested if you do see Bros. Let me know and tell me what you thought about it, because I'm going to do the same thing. Thank you so much, Emily Arminetti, on Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 335. I'm Jim Toronto. I'm here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screens.